Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live, wall-to-wall New Orleans Saints football talk. From our studios at Mead House. With me today, Heath Elsenson, Wesley Coleman, and we have the big man, Craig Wright, the offensive lineman, to kind of balance everything out, intelligence and non-intelligence. Thank you for joining us, Craig. I'm just kidding, man. You're my boy. So grab a drink, sit back and relax, because for the next hour or so, we'll be doing New Orleans Saints, BS and beer style. Gentlemen, I don't even know where to start. I feel like this is the same intro as last week. It's like deja vu, or what's the Groundhog Day thing? But New Orleans Saints play on Thanksgiving Day, and I have no other way to describe it as just embarrassing. I'm going to say the same thing I said last week as we were sitting down with production, talking about, you know, what we're going to talk about. And the only thing I can say is that I'm sorry. These are not the guys who should be playing offense for New Orleans Saints. I just don't. I mean, we could talk about it, but to me, it's fruitless. I heard, matter of fact, I'm going to go on a little rant here. I heard Bobby Hebert talking about the Saints, and I wanted to listen to the coach's show. And I listened to him say things like, oh, this rut that we're in. And he's like, and there's no excuses. There's no injuries aren't excuses, because the Buffalo Bills, they don't care. And it's on your record. Well, no crap, right? It's on our record. It counts just like whenever we played the Broncos last year, it counts. But having said that, at the end of the day, these guys are not the people who are going to be playing football for the Saints next year, or hopefully towards the later half of the season. And so this idea that it is such a cliche to say, injuries are excuse. And in some cases it is, you have to have depth on your team. But when it gets to the point where it's this ridiculous, just it's not sustainable. You can't do it. So I'm not going to sit here and spend a bunch of time. Listen, first of all, Bobby Hebert's nonsense. He thinks he's a Hall of Fame player. I used to listen to him, and he would say something about comparing himself to Drew Brees. And, well, you know, when I played, and I'm like, man, he just got to stop. But the point is that I don't want to hear people going over statistics. Well, the last three times we played the Cowboys, we didn't have Trevor Siemian as our quarterback. And I'm not going to sit here and blame everything on Trevor. I'm not going to sit here and blame everything on this offense as a whole. Is simply it's out of its depth. You can't compete with these guys.
Hey folks, all right, listen, I'm so not in the mood for you guys. You're blabbering on and on, okay? And it's enough, all right? It's enough. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, today's Monday, all right? So stop doing your stupid radio thing, and if you want to pick up where you left off tomorrow, at least it'll be Tuesday, all right? So just keep it down. Actually, don't keep it anything. Just stop. Okay. Just stop doing what you're doing.
Now, I guess what we'll do, and I'll start off with Craig, because the offensive line, it looks like after Landon Young went down, they brought Armstead back. And it seems like he may have just re-injured or, you know, re-aggravated whatever else was hurting him. And it doesn't look like he's going to be back. So we're in the same spot. Ramchek probably won't be back. Armstead won't be back. How do you field an offensive line with the guys that we have available to us, Craig?
Well, you field the guys that we have left, and it's, you know, everyone wants to talk about next man up. There's a reason they're backups. There's a reason they're undrafted free agents, you know? A lot of the guys have been playing admirably. Throckmorton's been playing admirably for what he's being asked to do. But this is a situation where you can't take it like a failure. You can't be embarrassed about it, because these guys shouldn't be playing in the first place. You know, when we lost to the Giants at home, that was kind of embarrassing.
That was
embarrassing. Had most of our club. But the Bills, we weren't supposed to win that game with what we had out on the field. You know, we don't have our quarterback. We don't have our running back. We don't have our top receiver. We have three of our five offensive linemen missing. You're not supposed to win that game. So for me, this is a season where until we get our horses on the field, you do what you can do. But I mean, I'm not going to take it personally. This isn't our team. This is, you know, what's left of our team.
Right. Absolutely. So
especially on the line.
So you had mentioned, Craig, about the push on the offensive line. And again, I want to establish, like, I guess I'm just tired of the low hanging fruit of everything. I think people want to blame everything on Trevor Siemian, who hasn't played well. Look, he played a good game against Tampa Bay. Then he played an unfortunate game against Atlanta where he had a ton of drop balls, but played well enough to win. And I think we saw the best version of him, but he's obviously a guy and that needs a supporting cast to be successful. He's not good enough to overcome the problems. And the offensive line that we saw couldn't run the ball, he didn't have time to pass the ball. And then when you add in his own limitations, it's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, honestly, if you put Trevor Siemian in there with Michael Thomas on the outside and Kamara behind him and the offensive line that he should have had from week one, you can win some games with Trevor Siemian and that offense around him. But that's not what he was given.
Absolutely.
So a lot of the criticism on him, that's not his fault. He's trying to make it do with, you know, Callaway and Tre'Quan Smith, both of which I'm a big fan of, but as, you know, 3-4 receivers, not your 1 and 2.
Absolutely. All right. So I think we established, I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about that game. There were some good things. Heath on defense, the Saints had 2 interceptions. That was the highlight of the entire game, I would say, is the Saints defense kind of came to play. I think they only gave up 10 points in the first half, or did they? Because I think, I'm telling you, I'm thinking, because I didn't go back and watch the game again. But I think that we tried a fake punt, and if I remember correctly, I may have had too many tequila shots. And and so did they end up scoring in that situation? But the defense held up in the first half.
Yeah, you know, look, the defense is under pressure. You know, the offense is so bad, and the defense has been on the field for so long, so many plays. And they're missing a few people too. You know, they're missing 2 defensive ends in Turner and Davenport. They were missing Passano. But the problem
CD Deuce
is,
as well.
Yeah, CD
Wesley's
Deuce,
guy.
But they've been on the field for too long. When it's a 3-and-out by the offense all the time, and when the offense has a turnover and puts them on a short field, and this is going on game in, you know, all game long. And then we even saw, you know, I saw a couple of examples of the defense start trying to do something because they know the offense can't.
Right.
Okay. And so then you start seeing a guy where they're trying to strip the ball, but they ran for another 15 yards before they actually tackled the guy because they're trying to pull the ball out instead of tackling to create the turnover to make something happen. And you get into that whole thing. And, you know, so and we got some guys that, you know, it's hard to evaluate because I look at Lattimore and I think, man, Lattimore is just not Lattimore right now. You know, but is that really what it is? Or is, you know, also, of course, this may be an old habit trying to resurface. I used to like to bang on Dennis Allen a lot. And there's been some times here when I don't think his play calling on defense has necessarily been that great at times recently. But, you know, so did Dennis Allen all of a sudden start calling bad games all at the same time? That, you know, no, probably not, right? The offense is just, it's got the whole thing out of whack. You know, the weight has come off of the wheel and the wheel is out of balance. And that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. We got to get some guys back. I mean, it's just that simple.
Wesley, anything to throw on top of it? Kind of maybe summarizing the game on Thursday. Any positive thoughts, negative thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say, I don't know if it's positive or negative, but for all the people who ever bring up that any college team would beat any pro team ever, this was not okay. Half of our team
looking at you
is
Dale.
True pro players, some of them on the verge of being voted to Pro Bowls and stuff like that. And then half of our team is guys that aren't just shouldn't be in the NFL. They're second or third stringers, should be in the NFL playing special teams, maybe developing to 2 or 3 years. But these are not college players. These are guys that are in the NFL for a reason individually. This shows you there's a difference between a pro team and the way they're going to play second stringers or third stringers or college players. And I mean, this, you end up with a team that gets 190 yards of total offense and is lucky to have 6 points in the entire game.
Well, and when you say 190, if you listen, we've had this, you've had this 3, maybe even 4 weeks in a row now, where late in the game we're behind,
yes,
and the defenses play differently. What you really need to do is see how much offense we produced the first three quarters, which was abysmal. The first half, abysmal. Like, not even a first down. Couldn't move the ball. Couldn't make a play. There's just no way to string plays together to get a first down. Now, Wesley, let's talk a little bit and switching gears. Thursday, the Saints play the Cowboys. Now, the Cowboys, on paper, we looked at this as going to be a tough game anyway. Now, the Cowboys are struck with the COVID thing, similar to what the Saints were back in week two. And I don't know if I want them to win like this. Like, if they could, and here's the thing, I still don't think they can win because the offense is still in the same position. But anyway, talk about the Cowboys, the COVID situation, and how it's going to affect the game.
Yeah, I mean, with what we're looking at, with Cowboys missing their head coach, they're missing a starting right tackle, a couple other coaches. It's also looking like Amari Cooper is cleared of COVID, but is still sick. And if they're saying if he doesn't practice tomorrow, he's definitely not playing, but he wasn't even allowed on the field today to practice. I mean, like you said, this is creating the perfect scenario of how, like, we can get back interested, and possibly there's a weird scenario of where Dak Prescott throws the ball to a Saint a few times, and then maybe we can win. And also, if they, I don't know. I mean, it's still a long shot. And we haven't seen Taysom play quarterback, like, since the preseason, or really last year. So no telling what he can bring.
Expect,
and we right. don't know how healthy Kamara is going to be. I mean, this is going to be a weird, interesting offensive game plan. That's going to be some running the ball, and it's not going to be out routes to Deontay Harris that Taysom's going to be throwing. And we still, regardless of all this, let's say Taysom is healthy, the foot's good, Kamara's back, Ingram's back, all that. We have the same offensive line that we had last week. I mean,
not even as good.
And I don't,
we minus
yeah,
Armstead.
Not even as good. We're right. minus Armstead. And we're not, I mean, we're talking about Ethan Greenidge probably being the left tackle, or somebody from the practice squad. I mean, we don't know who's going to be left tackle. And the one thing that the person who's not sick on the Cowboys is Micah Parsons, who makes tackles look really, really stupid the last 2 months. And neither one of our tackles is going to have a good time with him.
Well, Heath, relative to how poorly, now, relative to the first six games where the Saints played pretty well, game two was a complete outlier where I think all of us were astonished about how important the coaching staff is to the team. Do you think this, if there was a way that this would be the way that the Saints could have an equalizer, and it, not a talent equalizer, just an uncoordinated equalizer, you think it's a possibility?
I doubt it. Certainly it's a possibility. Okay. The problem for the Saints is,
do y'all know
Saints
who's taking just over for Mike McCarthy?
Huh?
No. Dan Quinn is the acting head coach this week for the Cowboys.
There is
an opportunity. That's the best chance for us to win is that Dan Quinn figures out ways for the Saints to win football games.
Yeah. All right, Heath.
I mean, look, is it possible? Sure. But the Saints are so depleted that it's hard to imagine, right? If the Saints were even close to halfway normal, then you go, okay, well, here's the equalizer or whatever, right? But I mean, how many guys are we going to be missing on offense again now? I mean, five starters, six starters. I don't know what it is, you know, but I doubt it. The dome certainly isn't going to bring us any sort of an advantage now. So that's gone now.
The fans have checked out as well.
But how could
is this going to, is this going to be a Falcons home game situation, a Thursday night against the Cowboys on, like, where we don't even, like, we just had, like, one of the most embarrassing games. Is this going to be the emptiest we've seen the dome in years?
I think it's completely possible.
I mean, listen, I would have to say that while we've done the radio thing, we're all fans at heart. And I personally, man, I've been a diehard fan my entire life. And the interest level. Now, look, back when they were terrible, I was still diehard. But, boy, once you get a taste of winning, it takes a while to get acclimated to not being great anymore before you start getting interested in a team that's just not very good. And like we saying, it was a team that went into the season that was kind of like, well, if everything goes right, but everything went wrong. Craig, is there any chance that we surprise the Cowboys?
Absolutely. I'm not saying it'll happen. I'm not saying I'm going to bet my mortgage on it, but yeah, look, like we guys talked about, you know, week two, we were, I think, a far superior team to Carolina. You're down a few coaches and you get manhandled. Coaching is important, man. I've been in situations where we played games without coaches before, and it's a different situation. It's just, you know, the communication is different. The motivations are different. Getting the play calls in this way, even if you still get the right information across, it's just a different animal. And, you know, it's a short week. They're on the road. There are stats about playing short weeks on the road on Thursday nights. They're beat up by COVID. I mean, yeah, absolutely, there's a chance. I'm not saying we're going to win, but yeah, there's a chance. Okay. It's all professionals out here.
Let me throw this in there. When you said, almost corrected you when you said short week, and I'm like, well, it really isn't because we played on Thursday. They didn't.
Yeah, they did.
So it is a short
week. It's the Cowboys. They played on Thanksgiving.
They played on Thursday.
Oh, they did. That's right. Huh? Yeah. Well, then it's not a short week.
My point is moot, and we're going to get killed. Yeah. So let's go with that.
Well, it's a shame on me because I was going to correct you and then realize I was wrong. That happens all the time. Wesley, I read something that I thought was interesting, and it was just some random guy on Twitter or something. And he says that Jameis Winston's not coming back. This new contract with Taysom, he thinks that his point pretty well stated was, I think the Saints saw everything they needed to see, and it wasn't good enough. Not that it wasn't the best that we had, but there's no point in bringing them back. How much validity do you think there is in that take?
I don't think that that's the thought process right now. I think that the Saints are probably going to hope to bring him back on basically the same contract he had this last year, let him compete for a job. And they're probably going to hope that the two of them are competing with Russell Wilson or somebody like that for the job. I don't think that the Saints are just going to sell out for it's Jameis versus Taysom. And one of them is the quarterback next year. I think that there will be a plan to bring in more competition, but I don't think it eliminates Jameis at all. I think that he endeared himself to the team and his work ethic. And I think that they would bring him in under the right kind of contract that if he did lose the job, they think he'd be a great backup here and trust him as somebody to help Taysom develop.
All right, Heath, same question. Do you think it's a possibility the Saints saw enough and they're just like, hey, let's give Taysom the I don't want to say big contract, but we'll give him a contract that still includes him in the quarterback game. And then we'll look for a young guy in the draft or maybe, you know, I hate this idea because I don't believe there's a way anyway to go get a guy under contract that's an upper tier quarterback. Just money and draft pick wise, I don't think it's possible. But Heath?
I think it is possible. I think that, you know, I would say I think it's more possible that he won't be back for a different reason. But, you know, I think they did look at Jameis and went, you know, might not have been as much progression as we've liked the scene. But, you know, look, if they could get him back on a similar contract, then why not? I mean, you know, it was a cap friendly deal and everything. But what I think is going to happen is I think we're going to watch Taysom Hill for the rest of the season now. I think we're going to see again that he's not good enough. I think the Saints are going to realize he ain't never going to make that 90 whatever million dollars. Okay, seriously, he's not. And I think Sean Payton's going to get tired of dicking around with it, right? I think Sean Payton wants a real quarterback back. I think he wants to roll again, right? Sean Payton's not going to spend too many years trying to figure it out and find a guy. And I just don't think so, right? We've had the rumors pop up again recently that the Saints are sniffing around the Deshaun Watson deal and all that kind of stuff. And we're kind of right away, you go, they're not. But there's been too many times that smoke has popped up. Now, whether it's Deshaun Watson or not, I don't know. But what it tells me is that don't count the Saints out in Loomis. Somehow, with how their cap looks and everything else, that they don't try to figure out a way to come up with a Deshaun Watson or a Russell Wilson or somebody and move on. And that would just kind of by default put Jameis out. Not necessarily that they, even if they think highly of him still, I just something tells me Sean Payton is not going to go into next year with a guy coming back from an ACL injury that they're going to give another show me deal, and they're going to dick around with him and Taysom Hill again, who I don't think is going to show out here at the end of this season. I don't see them sitting pat with that again going into next year. That's just a gut feeling.
Okay, Craig, I'm gonna go with the same question, but add the caveat that Heath just brought up is Taysom Hill had his struggles when he was playing quarterback on an outstanding roster last year. Now you add to the fact that, I mean, are the Saints doing him any favors by starting him with the offensive line we have, the skilled players that we have, A and B? What do you think about, I want to know your thoughts on the, do we bring Winston back thing, or have the Saints seen enough?
Well, I mean, we're obviously not doing him any favors. I mean, he's going to be under pressure every drop back, you know, every, you know, QB power that he's so good at is going to have less push than it used to. Yeah. We're setting him up for failure. This is going to be Christmas Day for everyone who always wanted Taysom Hill to not play quarterback for the Saints, most of us included. This is going to be Christmas morning. We're going to be opening our little presents, and everyone's going to say, look, he threw two interceptions, and he got killed behind an offensive line full of guys that look like me.
And if you add to that the people who are Taysom fans, I think it gives them another built-in excuse to keep arguing the point.
What I'm saying right now.
Right.
You know what? The thing about bringing it back to the Jameis Winston extension, I think that they saw a plan. The record speaks for themselves. 4-2, 5-2 if you include the game he started but didn't finish. We're not going to conclude that. That was a Trevor Siemian game. But 4-2 as a starter. His touchdown interception ratio was fantastic. His completion percentage wasn't. But that's the kind of thing that you can work on with the offense, with the timing, with developments, and getting guys like Michael Thomas back. That percentage goes a whole lot higher when you got a guy like that who can fight for the football. I don't think there's any reason not to go after somebody like Russell Wilson. You don't go after Deshaun Watson, because if Roger Goodell sees that Deshaun Watson is on the Saints, he's going to come down real hard on all that, and he's not going to play again ever. So okay. I like the idea of going after somebody like Wilson, but I mean, you don't want to go through the exact same thing as this year, but if it's me, I think they go after Jameis Winston, a similar show up deal. And Taysom Hill's going to be on the roster, trying to play quarterback, failing, being his Swiss Army knife.
Okay.
Dave, I'll ask you a question, kind of what you brought to it. If Jameis in his first six games proved to the Saints brass that he's not the quarterback of the future, is Taysom going to do the exact same thing in the next six games, do you think? I mean, I don't see how Taysom's next six games is going to be, for some of it for roster, some of it for he did lose the job to him. I don't see Taysom's next six games being worse or being better than Jameis's first six.
No. To me, when I actually try to take the black and gold glasses off and I look at Jameis's, and I know he was working with a small deck to begin with. I said deck, right? Okay. with a roster that wasn't ideal. But I look at it and say it really wasn't impressive. Everybody's like, oh, they need to take the handcuffs off there. And quite frankly, I think that the coaches did things that they thought were best to make him most successful. So my point is, I don't know if I agree with it completely, but what I do think is after watching Simeon's two or three games, and now the wheels came off, but it's not all his fault because the team around him fell apart. But what it did make me do is say, golly, two games after Jameis, what's the difference? And that tells you, if you think Siemian was playing almost as good as Jameis and statistically they were right there, you have to say, are they either of them good enough? And if you don't think Simeon's good enough, then how can you say that Winston's good enough? So I'm not committal, but I'll say that I wonder if the Saints aren't like, we need a better quarterback, meaning yeah, Jameis might be fine, but I don't want fine. I want something closer to Breeze than something closer to Jameis. Now, I'm going to ask you, Wesley, you were the next in line because points were brought up, and you brought up something when we were in our production meeting about you read something from Underhill. I didn't see it, but it talked about how much salary you can. I don't believe. And I'm going to say before you made that comment, my point is you have to give away too much in draft picks and players and salary to get any of these big name guys, Wilson, Watson, or even Green Bay,
Rodgers.
But then you went on to talk about this article written by Underhill talking about how much we could shave off. And it kind of changes my perspective a little bit because maybe you can't afford it. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So right now the Saints are projected to be 60 to 70 million over the salary cap this next year. Pennies compared to the 103 million or whatever last year. So, but we're projected to be 60 or 70 million. He's put out an article of how we can cut almost $90 million off the salary cap without cutting a player, and which is a big deal to us because we also don't have a lot of players under contract.
Right. So we only have I think it's 32 players under contract. So when you say, hey, you can keep all your players, you're not keeping a whole roster. You're only keeping 32 players.
Right. And we need starters. I mean, as much as we want to say that we don't want to pay Cam Jordan as he gets older, 15, 16 million, you also don't want the two third stringers playing either. I mean, and at least he's there and healthy right now. So, and shows up to games.
You can say you don't want the three first play.
But no, I mean, there's a way for us to get about $30 million under the salary cap without using a single player. Now it's honestly, every single move is stuff that the Saints pretty much do every year anyway.
Well, the difference,
restructuring
though,
bonuses and
the difference though is that they have select players every year. It's like they go to the credit card on this guy and this guy.
Right.
Last year, this is why I was like, listen, I'm not trying to hear about all what they're going to do and kick the can, because they kicked everybody last year. Any person with a more than rookie or free entry level deal got redone. And we even have Cam Jordan, who they redid his contract. In order to do this, you have to extend a player, which means he's now making $15+ million a year into his mid 30s. And he's going to be 34, 35, 36. Can they continue to do that?
I mean, I don't think we should. And I kind of went on record of saying, I think it's going to take another bad season to write this. And I think that what we're doing, Dave, is we're kind of what you alluded to. We're kicking the can down the road, but these players are getting too old, and they also are getting to where they can't be taken out of the can. Like they are going to be here and old. And I think it's me as somebody who's a Saints fan that wants the Saints to win every single game, every single year. We've already had this year that for injuries and different things is a wasted year. If you have one more of these years, I think you come out of it pretty bright on the other side pretty quick. I think it's a risk to restructure all these and do this deal.
I don't
think the Saints will do it.
And
I think
correct
the Saints
me if I'm
are
wrong,
going to.
Teron Armstead, his contract is up. He has ghost years. His contract gets accelerated. So the point is, if they cut him, it actually costs more money than if they re-sign him.
Well, no. Teron Armstead is counting $12.29 million salary cap next year, whether he is cut or whether he is plays here. Now, if they sign him to a long deal, they can delay some of that.
Right,
$12 million,
just by spreading
but
it out.
But they probably wouldn't do that. Probably he is counting $12.29 million no matter what.
Okay.
Whether he's on the roster, whether we sign him, pretty much no matter what.
All right. So, Heath, you were telling us about the Mount Everest size pile of cans that the Saints have kicked down the road. I don't really have a question. I just want to point out that you said that and it was funny.
Yeah.
So,
it's a Mount Everest side of cans with skeletons stuffed all in them.
Yeah. Like all the bodies.
Yeah.
I missed that episode of Breaking Bad.
it was actually Game of Thrones. But anyway, so should they do it? I mean, do the Saints, Heath, do they just bite the bullet and say, man, I mean, there's so much talent on this roster. There really is. But we are so upside down in this cap. I understand the dilemma. But here's the problem. By the time you get out of it, guys like Lattimore, they'll be 3 years older. Same principle. Although I'm looking at a guy like, and it's just one, it's an exception, a kid in New England. He's a quarterback. He's turned Jones. Like – He's gotten the point where he's making them a playoff team this year, but there are several other quarterbacks that are rookies that aren't doing that. if the Saints get a rookie, I mean, you'd have to, it would be the exception if the Saints turn it around next year. So at some point, what do you do? Do you bring back another average quarterback in Hill or Winston? Do you just say, man, we just got to clear the salary cap out and just start fresh? It's a dilemma. I don't know. You have too much talent just to say, yeah, let's just start trading everybody. I don't know what to do. I don't. And I know you do.
Yeah. Well, that's probably what the Saints should do, right? You got to reset at some point because you can't do it forever. There's going to come a point where you literally, they will run out of room that they just can't do any, you know. Now, how far into the future is that? I'm not sure. I thought we would have been even closer to it than we are somehow.
Every player on the team is on a 12-year, $16 million per year deal.
Right. Can we choose our reset to be not when we have Alvin Kamara and Michael Thomas in their primes?
Well, you know, that's the problem, you know. So it's like, but when are you ever going to have that situation? If you keep drafting well, you're always going to have these guys and you're going to be going, oh, well, you know, it's one more year and the window is just still open. It's getting ready to close. You know, we got into this chasing behind Breeze with the window closing and the you know, I mean, you're always doing this to some extent, but I think the Saints got heavily into this with Drew Brees.
And then the COVID thing, let's not forget that it was working fine until, you know, daddy had a heart transplant and lost his job. And then all of a sudden the bills came.
Well, it always hurts when you cut the cap on top of everything else. But yeah, I mean, do I think the Saints will do it? No, I think the Saints are going to continue to operate business as usual. I don't see Sean Payton 15 years into his Saints tenure going, let's do a reset and we'll start a rebuild. And in 4 years from now, we'll be back. I don't see that happening, right? I don't see Sean Payton doing that anyway. I definitely don't see him doing it at this stage of his career. If he was earlier in his career and you go, well, we're going to suffer for a few years, but we'll come out of it. And I'm still 40 something years old or whatever, you know? I don't see nothing about the Loomis and Peyton would give me the impression that they're going to do anything like that.
All right. So with our void of skill players, assuming that Kamara comes back healthy and the way that Ingram's playing pretty well, Craig, should we consider putting him as a wide receiver as opposed to a running back, keep him more healthy and improve our wide receiver group? Do you have some thoughts on that?
So wide receiver is a bit of a misnomer. I want to play him more in the slot. And I want to play him more in the slot because there's that flexibility where getting him the ball in space, it just makes him that much. He's a great running back. He's a fantastic running back. Our offensive line cannot support a great running back right now. If you put prime Adrian Peterson back there, he's going to get killed because we have, you know, Throckmorton and Hurst and guys I'm all big fans of that shouldn't be starting on the Saints. So if you put him in a situation where he can get the ball without getting hit 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage, I think it's a benefit. I'm not saying that in the long term for his career, you make him a receiver. I think he might play longer if you make him a receiver long term. But to help the team the most, you want to get him the ball. And no matter how you get him the ball, you need to get him the ball.
Wesley, Craig says that Kamara should be a full-time wide receiver, maybe an X or a Y.
Slot. We're going with slot.
Oh, I'm sorry. Don't call me that.
Should be a Z.
Wesley, your thoughts on it?
I think that if we're trying to win football games this year, I don't know if I know enough about the intricacies of it, but to me, I think that this year, Alvin Kamara could be one of the two best wide receivers on the team now that we've lost Kevin White again. I mean, so I moves him up the pecking order. And I mean, I don't know. I just wonder if it'd be some crazy thing to do with if you think Ingram can, I mean, he did well in Tennessee of holding, carrying the ball 20 times or whatever. If you can get enough out of him, to where he can play as a, you know, starting running back, does it allow Kamara to do something else? I mean, the same thing is kind of the reason a lot of us said Trevor Siemian should be the quarterback so that Taysom Hill can play the Taysom Hill role. Because what does it help you to, if Taysom becomes the quarterback and then you lose the Taysom Hill role? So this is the same sort of thing. Is there a role that he can play that makes sense, and gives us another weapon on the field. I mean, lining up the backfield with Ingram and Kamara both in the backfield at the old times, that's just not going to work over and over.
Yeah, to Wesley's point, if two of our, you know, three best weapons are both running backs, why are you going to have them take turns getting the ball when you can have them both be threats on the field at the same time?
I disagree with that concept. That's obviously pretty smart. I just think that you guys way underestimate. I mean, he is an outstanding receiver as a running back, but I think if you lined him up in the slot or, you know, obviously out wide, but in the slot, he would get covered a different way by different people. And, you know, you would still have the situation where they weren't sure, is he going to be a running back? But if he got to the point where, no, he's lined up in the slot, play after play, they would cover him a different way and with different people, and he wouldn't be getting his open. If you go back to
the game, our third receiver
I actually agree with that. It's just our current receivers aren't getting open either, and they can't catch the ball when it hits them in the chest.
So okay,
so I mean, all I'm saying is he's not worse than little Jordan Humphrey, who get open and doesn't catch the ball.
It's the concept.
Well, hold on now.
It's the concept of being like, okay, do we take our all-world center and make him a guard so that we can take our struggling guard and make him a solid center, and then you're weakening two positions. Sure. I'm, you know, honestly, listen to your arguments. You know, I don't think it's – I just think that you would weaken him as a running back and he wouldn't be a great receiver. And I do agree that you could make an argument that he could be better than what we have. But I don't think y'all really appreciate how much
because Jordan Kevin Humphrey, White has been cut.
Yeah, and I don't think y'all appreciate how much little Jordan Humphreys busted out last week.
It's little. And
for what it's worth, I don't think Kamara's going to end up playing this week.
Ooh. All right, Heath, you got any thoughts on this?
Well, what you do is you line them up both in the backfield, and then you have Kamara go in motion to go to the slot. But it's only going to work if Ingram is effective enough that they still have to worry about the run. If they know every time you put him out there, it won't be effective, right? I mean, that's like trying to do a play action pass with no run. I mean, but they just what they need to do is put them both on the field, put him in a slot, throw screen, you know, the long handoff idea, right? The typical short passes that he catches anyway. Because you're right. If they line him up at the slot more like a wide receiver, he is going to get covered by he's not going to have the mismatches that he does from the running back position. But also, if you're putting him in a slot where he's going to be playing across the middle a lot, I don't know that you're going to be doing him that many health favors either if he's going to be getting killed going across the middle constantly. So
all right. So, Heath, we kind of made maybe I made the commitment that I'm not going to sit here and just go over all the negatives of the Saints game. So, some exciting news for LSU fans. They got a new coach, Chip Kelly. Wow. Oregon didn't do so well over in Philadelphia. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about LSU's new coach.
Well, man, I've said all along when people ask me, who's your guy? Who the coach you want? Anybody competent, right? Anybody that's not a freaking moron, like the last two guys that we have, one that's chewing grass on the sideline, the other one that, you know, wasn't even a great defensive line coach, much less a coordinator or a head coach or a
Go Tigers.
Both of those guys were able to win national championships. So what happened if you ever hired a guy that's actually the adult in the room? Okay. He's not going to be running around with whores. You know,
more whores for us.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah, exactly. I mean, let us do that. You got to coach the football team, but knows game management, actually can take care of one side of the ball, right? He's actually an expert on one side of the ball or the other. He spent time as a coordinator, you know, he knows what's actually happening on the field. And quite frankly, you got that and more, right? I mean, this guy's got 263 career wins. He's third of active coaches. And actually, if you, that's not counting his Grand Valley State
right.
wins because he's a Division II or whatever. If you include that, he's second.
Where he won two national titles.
Yeah. Where he won. Yeah. Two national championships. But, this guy, you know, does he control one side of the ball? Yeah, he's an offensive guy. Check. You know, does he act like an adult and is he scandal? Well, mostly scandal free. different kind of scandals. Just don't put anybody on the scissors left outside or anything. But, you know, I mean, the point is that, you know, this guy should be able to take the same resources that Ed Orgeron and Les Miles were able to win two and play for three national championships and run with it. I mean, I just don't see, I don't see how anybody right now can be doom and gloom about this hire. Yeah, I get it. I would love to have had the same guy, but at 40 years old or whatever, or, you know, we could sit here and nitpick little things about it, but man, I mean, it's a home run, man. As far as, you know, they're going to look competent. They're not going to be a national joke, and they're going to win a lot of games, and they're probably going to win national championships. I mean, you know, sign me up. I'm good. I'm happy.
Wesley, throw something on there, man.
Yeah. Love it. I mean, we're talking about, like he said, this is a guy that has done more with less. I mean, talking about winning national titles at Grand Valley State. He took Cincinnati and made them where they're one of the powerhouses in college football, that he started leading that charge that changed them. And then at Notre Dame, there are some more stringent testing and grades needed to be there over LSU. So, I mean, he's had good recruiting classes, but he's also dealt with, I mean, it's a lot harder to get students in there, where LSU is basically, I mean, I don't even know if some of our players can spell their names, and they're allowed to get in the school.
That's
so
rude.
But this is a guy that has been able to take that kind of talent and make them national powerhouses, where they have, you know, competed as top 10 teams consistently. LSU is always going to be in the top three or four of recruiting classes every single year. And if he can do that kind of stuff with, you know, 15 and top 15 and 20 recruiting classes, it's going to be better. And like he said, he's not going to come in and embarrass us. He's not going to be an idiot. And it sounds like he's also not going to hire high school football coaches to be our assistants on offense and defense and coordinators. He's going to bring a real staff with him of people who can recruit players and can coach and get the best out of players.
Craig, any thoughts on the LSU hire?
I mean, some of those names are hard to spell. I mean, in their defense, how spoiled are we as LSU fans? Is it our last three coaches all have national championships?
Yep.
Was there a gap from Saban to Miles?
Yeah.
So three in a row. I'm probably four in a row. We got this guy for 10 years. I mean, you look at the kind of talent LSU has had right now, and they're struggling, sure, but they're not struggling because they don't have fantastic players on there. Even the offensive line that we've been beating up on all year have had, you know, five-star recruits, all this kind of stuff. Now you're bringing in a guy who has a history of, as Heath was telling me the other day, about putting all these guys into the NFL, and they have more NFL offensive linemen from Brian Kelly's program than anybody else. And you're going to give him the kind of recruiting on offensive line that we have at LSU. Man, this could turn into a just pound people, beat them down, win by 20, and they don't want to walk the next day kind of offense. And oh, I love it. Y'all can't see how excited I am because it's just audio, but I'm very excited right now.
Well, and you were alluding to it earlier, Dave. I mean, about this Saints season and how it's been wearing us down. LSU having two tough seasons in a row has made it worse on all of us. So this is some sort of bright spot of good news that was needed before this football season is over for both the college and the pro team.
Well,
I mean, we needed something.
Yeah.
So we can look forward to.
Heath alluded to him being an older coach and, you know, maybe we could have got him at 40 if we're nitpicking or whatever, but quite frankly, based on our history, you know, he's going to be here for 4 years, win a national championship and get fired for some reason. And, you know, that's just the way we roll. Right. But hopefully.
Doesn't anybody call Pete Carroll old? Isn't Pete Carroll 10 years older than Brian Kelly?
He is. He's 70. Yeah.
And nobody talks about how Pete Carroll is just waiting around to retire. What are we worried about? He's coaching. We're not asking him to tackle anybody. Who cares how old he is?
Well, look, Saban took over Alabama at 57 and Brian Kelly's 60. So, you know,
Seems to be working out okay for them.
Right. In other words, and they gave him a 10-year contract. If he fulfills that contract, nobody's going to be complaining, right? Because he was good enough to stay for 10 years and you actually got 10 years out of him. And so everybody will be happy. But look, for all of the people who are still doom and gloom about we lost Lincoln Riley and, you know, we're not real and nobody wants this job because Lincoln Riley. And look, I was definitely on a Lincoln Riley train. Okay. I was, well, that's the Lane train, the Lincoln Riley bandwagon, the Sooner Schooner. Okay. But look, you don't know everything about a guy, okay? So what do we know about him now that things are starting to come out of Oklahoma and everything? Well, he was upset when Oklahoma decided to join the SEC. Okay, he never wanted to be in the SEC is where I'm going with this. Second of all, apparently he was not only upset they went to SEC, but they didn't consult him. So he's actually apparently a narcissist. That a university didn't ask him whether it was okay for them to switch conferences.
He didn't want to lose six
games
a year.
That's going to result in hundreds and millions or billions of dollars over the next decade, you know, okay? But the bottom line is, and then the Oklahoma reporters started saying now that they knew that he would never coach Oklahoma in the SEC because he knew, he did know that his ceiling, he had reached his ceiling at Oklahoma. But now, if, and I think he was, I don't think LSU and him were as far as long as a lot of people believe,
right,
where it was a done deal and they got jolted at the altar. I don't think that was the situation. They certainly had conversations with him. He had an opportunity to go in the SEC with a program that didn't have the ceiling, and he didn't want it. He went to USC. He went the easy path. He went out to Southern California to where, you know, what he's maybe got to worry about, Oregon, maybe. And, you know, to get back to the playoffs. But the problem is he went to the Oklahoma of the West, and he's going to wind up with the same college football playoff record that he had at Oklahoma, which is 0-3. In the meantime, the guy you got now, his team, according to ESPN, has a 60% chance of actually making the playoff, and he just left. Why? Because he knows that most likely, even if they do, he's not going to win, right? He's going to be the number four seed, and he's going to face Georgia the first week of the, you know, right, the first game in the playoffs. He said, the hell with that. I'm going to go down to the SEC. I'm going to go to the toughest division in the toughest conference in college football because I got something I want to accomplish, and I don't want to, you know, I've been here, done this with Notre Dame. We're at the ceiling. I'm not actually going to win the championship. I'll take that guy. I don't care if he's 60 years. I don't care anything else. Definitely give me that guy over the other guy that just ran out to USC.
Well, all right, fellas. I think that's about all the show we have. Craig, any final thoughts?
Yeah, it's gonna be really, really fun to watch Taysom Hill make us all look stupid the next few weeks. I cannot wait for all four of us to just think about, damn, I didn't see that coming at all. How did the Saints score 65 points in that game? I don't even know how that math works out. It's going to be real exciting. Can't wait for it.
Okay, so you had to go way overboard. But I will say that this week, and I think because things have been so bad that now all of a sudden I'm like, man, Taysom could do some stuff, man.
You know, now, if we just competitive, it's exciting, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's going to be exciting. Let's do it.
Heath.
You know it's bad when Craig has lost his positivity. You know it's bad.
That's right.
But yeah, I am looking forward to a duel of two absolutely dynamic quarterbacks. Which one could put on a better physical clinic? You know, no, I'm going to watch because I'm a Saints fan, right? And I'm interested to see what happens in a train wreck kind of way. But I don't give the Saints much chance of winning this game. And you know what? I hate to say it. I'm at the point now where I'm doing the old thing of, you know, it'd be better off if they just lose all the rest of these games, get the better draft pick thing, right? That's where I'm at. I'm firmly in the weeds. You should just lose out to get a better draft pick.
So that way we don't have to add as many fourth rounders when we trade for Russell Wilson.
Exactly. We try to get better ammo to, you know, we need $100 million silver bullet some kind of way to get us out of this trouble that we're in. But anyway.
Craig, over the next 4 weeks, is Taysom going to throw for more touchdowns than Peyton Turner sacks?
Yeah, that's just unnecessarily hurtful. That's just mean to say. Considering my boy Peyton Turner is not going to play the next 4 weeks, I feel like it's a fairly safe. He's going to win 1-0 in these next 4 weeks.
Craig, should we just settle up now since it doesn't look like Davenport or
– I ain't doing it. No, Davenport ain't – is he playing this week either?
No, he's
– okay, no. It's standing pat then. I'm going to stay with my bet until the season's over.
All right. So for those of you who don't remember, I have Davenport. And he has the Rook and Turner. And
where do we stand right now?
I think it's 3-1 Davenport right now.
No, stop it.
I think it's
up to like 7 or 8.
5.5 or something.
Five and a half. Yeah. I bet you it was 3.
This is probably 8. I'm just guessing.
But anyway. It gets divided in half by how many first round picks we lit on fire for him.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all the show that we have for you. So for Heath Elson-Son, Wesley Coleman, Craig Wright, don't forget about Dale and Tomas. and all the great shows on the Dome Patrol Network, where you can get a variety of shows in one feed. The Dome Patrol main show, The Tiger's Den with Scott, and Taking the Over with Billy Gunn, Premier League with Ben and James. I'm Dave Romero. You've been listening to the BS and Beer podcast, and we'll talk to you after an exciting victory over the Dallas Cowboys on Thursday night.
And anyway, the person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back, and that's the way it is.
Oh, but don't waste time to tune into our podcast. Oh, go give your time to David, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we do this every week, every Wednesday. So don't miss, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast. We have a lot of fun. I love this podcast, oh, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast, we have a lot of fun. I love this podcast.